Yo, what's up, y'all? My name is Ian Edwards, and welcome to the Soccer Comic Rant. And thanks for watching. Thanks for listening. Like and subscribe if you're watching on YouTube. And leave a comment if you're listening on any of those streaming platforms that ask you to rate the podcast. We're glad you're doing either or both. We're covering the World Cup. Last we spoke to you, U.S. was still in the World Cup, and a lot of cocky American pundits was talking about we could beat Holland, and Holland has proved that you can't beat them, and there's levels to this shit, and we saw those levels. I think it was that game Sunday or Saturday. I can't remember, but then England played Senegal. We saw the levels to that. And so we're going to get into those games. We're going to get into the games today, Brazil today, France yesterday, and, you know, the games tomorrow with Portugal. And who else is playing tomorrow? Portugal, Switzerland, and Morocco, Spain. Yeah, I forgot Spain was still in the tournament. We're going to get into that. But I'm joined at first with Lee Hudson, stand-up comic from England, Southampton fan, and lives in England. He's going to tell us what the vibe is there since England beat Senegal 3-0. What's going on? What's going on?
Apparently, apparently it's coming home. The trophy's going to be won, and all this and that. I don't necessarily agree with that, but you know what people are like over here. They love to. It's either, you know, we're either the worst team in the world or the best team in the world. There's never any in between with England. Some of these same people that were, you know, like I say, we were the worst team in the world after we drew with the US. And now we're the best team in the world after beating Senegal.
And I got a lot of respect. Love or hate?
It is. And I got a lot of respect for Senegal. They're a good team, but they're a team that England should be beating. You know, they're tricky opponents, but we showed the quality there. It's the same way when, I mean, I know we had a good tournament in 2020 for the Euros, but people got carried away when we smashed up Ukraine 5-0 in a knockout round. And people were dancing in the streets like we had won the whole tournament then. It's like, no, we got a lot to do still. And I know we all made it to the final and almost won and performed very well at that tournament. But it's like, no, you just, I don't know if it's because I, as a person, I'm quite sort of, I don't get too high, I don't get too low kind of thing. So I treat football like that as well. But
maybe it's comedy. Maybe comedy has like humbled you so much. Like comedy will really do stuff for your personality that'll make, you know, for some comics, not everyone, that'll make you receive, like, you know, the amount of rejection you get on a daily basis, like from joke to joke, or from being able to get on stage and being told you can't get on stage, or you send in an audition, it kind of like levels you out, you know? So yeah, the comedy is a good medication. I think that everybody in England should try comedy for a year. Calm them the fuck down.
That's it. Our football support would be a lot more rational, if that was the case. But I went to two different bars yesterday. I went to one for the first half, one for the second half. I did a show just before the game as well. We did a 5 p.m. show because it was 7 p.m. kickoff. So people were really getting in. That's it. I saw the vibe at two different places. And again, both places, people were, everyone's singing It's Coming Home. There's, you know, a lot of songs about Southgate and stuff. And, you know, props to him. The guy's a good tournament manager. But, you know, just be realistic, people. We got to get past. I mean, I don't know if these people have been watching what Mbappe's been doing.
They don't care. They don't care.
Yeah, and you know, they're like, oh, we got Kyle Walker, he's quick. It's like, well, Kyle Walker was getting left on the ground by Ismail Assar, who plays I think he's still at Watford, that guy.
Watford, yeah, in the championship.
He's still at Watford, he's playing in the championship, and he left Kyle Walker in the dust. Mm-hmm. It's like Mbappe is gonna I mean, go speak to Matty Cash, ask Matty Cash how Mbappe was. Yeah, so people are getting carried away. Like I say, worst team in the world after we drew with the US, best team in the world after beating Senegal. My views are somewhere in the middle. I like to be realistic about things. I think that's comedy, but it's also being a Southampton fan. It means my expectations are never too high.
but that should be the deal with most fans, because English fans support like teams. Not everybody's like a top three fan or top six fan. Yeah. So they always should be used to disappointment, and they learn to manage it that way. Neil is about to jump in. So I'm surprised, but I'm not surprised at the same time. Like for me over here, like there's Kate Abdi. She has a show. She does a really good show for the Champions League with Carragher and Micah Richards and Thierry Henry. So now she's doing one for the World Cup and Midnight Show, recaps everything. And she had on some English pundits, ex-players, and they are like, but I know France is good, but look at the way we play, look at our goals, and then they're matching stuff up in a favorable way to themselves. I said, no, bro, this is football. Like, I sit back and I watch the style and football, and like we had three counters yesterday, attacks that got our goals going. Like France,
those first 30 minutes were terrible. We'd have been 2-0 down if that was France.
Yeah, I wouldn't even call it terrible, because when you watch the France game, like who did they play again? Let me check.
Poland.
Poland got some chances on them, and Lloris was pretty good. So I could say that every team, good or bad, gives, you know, the other team some type of chance. So Poland had some chances early. What's up, Neil? I'll introduce you officially in a minute. But my take on England is this. Our first game was against Iran. Like, there's a lot of stuff going on in Iran, and trying to say it right. And there's a lot of stuff going on there. And it was the first game with all this stuff going on. So we probably are good, but we also probably caught them in like a confused mindset, because they definitely corrected their mentality after that 6-2. They, you know, because they beat Wales and they went down to the wire against the US. So that was a different Iran team the next two games of the tournament. Then we played USA, and USA pushed us. And we didn't look great, but I also think that game also woke us up a little bit. The players needed that game, and they needed like the bashing from they kind of. So sometimes when, you know, with comics, we have a bad set or just an okay set, and you're like, it kind of makes you like look for the problems and try to fix them. So I think we did that. The third game was against Wales, and you know, Wales is like, you know, we talk about Wales on a podcast, and I was like, Wales is just missing something. It's not there. There's nothing they could do to get it, and we should be able to beat them, and we beat them. And then the next game is against Senegal, who are the African champions, but is missing Mane. Is it Idrissa Gueye?
He was out, he was injured.
And Kouyaté, what's his name?
Kouyaté.
Who does Kouyaté play for against? Is it Forest?
He's at Forest. Yeah, he was at Palace for quite a few years, and then he went to Forest.
Yeah, and he's fucking like Kouyaté. He ain't gonna stay. Well, they paid for him, and Forest is trying to stay in the league. But if Forest goes down, I'd suggest anybody get him. That guy is like, he stands out when they're losing. So those are three main players. England has their full squad except with Ben White, who we weren't using, and Sterling. You know, we can. You know, Sterling had some issues with some burglary, so he wasn't there. He wasn't available. So I just feel like you, like I'll be impressed with England if we beat France. If we beat France, then I'm like, it's coming home. But I'm not going to dismiss France, because I've seen France. I respect how fucking amazing and the class of football that they've been playing. So for us to beat them, even if it's ugly, and we beat them, even if it's like we just get one goal or a penalty, I'm like, it's coming home. Because to shut down that attack with all the quality they have in every area of the field, I have to respect England. But I'm not. Yeah, I want England to win, but I would never before France say it's coming home.
Yeah. But they're proven as well, though. Like, they're World Cup winners. They've got guys on the team that have done this.
Yeah.
They've got the medals. They know how to win tournaments. Right. And also, like England are a good team. England are a good team, and we have some world-class players, which means we could win this game. But it's not a given. I would make France favourites.
Yes, 100%.
But it's a game of football and we could win it. But it's just like, you know, people need to calm the fuck down. we're going up against the champs. So, you know, I would say it's a 60-40 France's favor, in my opinion.
Yeah, yeah. And 40 is good.
It's a good chance.
And fans, when you get disrespectful, the word gets back to France and to the players. Mm. Because they're always looking for something. Every member in it, you know, it's like any stat, you know, you use stats to improve players, you know, performance, but you also use like insults as an adrenaline boost, as a narcal shot to like, yo, let's, you know, you saw what Canada's coach's words did to old ass Croatia. It turned them 20 something years old. They became the youngest team in the tournament the day they played Canada. They busted Canada's ass, young ass, all over the place. So you just don't want to do that. Neil, go ahead.
But just quickly, we've seen it before, like against Italy in the Euros final and also against Croatia in the last World Cup. Both those teams were, like, they used It's Coming Home as a motivation. They were singing it after the games. It's like, I hate that song because our fans sing it as soon as we win one game. And then all of a sudden teams are like, look at these arrogant fucks. And they use that song, like teams use that song as motivation. So we shouldn't be singing it until it fucking comes home. It's like, don't sing it after the first knockout round. Don't sing it after a group stage game against Wales. Right. So calm the fuck down and let the boys go out there and do their jobs and we'll see if it's good enough.
And we got Neil here, Chakravarti, stand-up comic, Chelsea fan. But Neil, you put that stat in the... Was it you that put that stat in the chat today?
About Southgate?
So tell us the stat. Yeah. And what do you think about Gareth Southgate, like, so far, his management of England?
You know, I think I need to accept. I have like a very conflicted relationship with Gareth Southgate.
I think everybody does.
Yeah, like he's, there's nothing great about him, but he's just about good enough to hang. Like, you know, he makes it work in those in those moments. But I think you kind of have to understand that's pretty much, I think that is essentially what coaching at national level says. You never have the best coaches at national level, right? I think what's happening with...
Are you sure?
Yeah, I mean, you look at all the previous, the best coaches in the world. You never see, like at any point, you never see the best coaches in the world matching a national team, right? Like, I think Luis Enrique with Spain is an outlier. Like, it's an exception, which is why I think the Spanish team have, like, even though they're personnel-wise, they're not that great, but I think just having that really high level of coach gives them, you know, kind of balances it out for them.
Del Bosque before him.
But Del Bosque also was, you know, this was like past his prime Del Bosque. Like, just like Louis van Gaal. Like,
How dare you, bro? I love Del Bosque. Watch your mouth, bro.
Del Bosque and van Gaal, both Champions League winners before they went international team.
But that's what I'm saying. That's like, you know, when you're winding down your career, you're kind of, you know, we're going to have the 2030 World Cup with Mourinho, Klopp.
Euros and the World Cup.
I'm not doubting that he's a good coach, but you know, like the best coaches in the world, which are like, you know, are managing clubs, so they can't manage a national team at the same time. You know, we saw Antonio Conte with Italy. So when it happens, it's pretty rare, right? So it's not like Southgate always having to come up against a Guardiola or a Klopp. He is coming up against people who have fallen into circumstances very similar to his. So you know, he does a decent enough job. Like I've been saying, even since, you know, when you're leading up to the World Cup, like even when you're talking about England versus France, of course the England teams should fear the French. But I'm pretty sure France also, you know, it has reasons to be fearful of England. Like they know this is going to be as good a matchup you can get in this World Cup. So I don't think the result of that game, I don't think it's as one-sided as it may seem, even though this is the reigning, you know, world champions. And this is like the Mbappe, you know, they have superstars all over the pitch. But, you know, in a way, so do England. Like England has some of the best players in a lot of positions, and they are right now. I mean, you're the highest
scoring. Maguire.
Yeah.
Does France have a Maguire back there?
It'll be tough to see Maguire lift the World Cup, but it can happen. You know,
Maguire is going to be looking across the field at the person who took his spot in defense on the France team. You know.
Oh, Varane.
One thing I would say about Southgate's tournament record and the fact that it's so good compared to other previous England managers, I think one of the big things is I think it's a number of factors. One of them is that he is a good tournament manager. He understands international football. You know, he came up through the FA working with the under-21s and stuff. He got experience of tournament football. He understands how tournament football works. He's played in tournaments. He's, by all accounts, very good at creating a good environment around the squad, fostering a good atmosphere, you know, no cliques or anything like that. He seems to be able to bring players together. I don't think he's necessarily a master tactician. He's not bad, though. He knows what he's doing. But I think also a lot of this coincides with the good timing of... There was something put in place in 2011 in English academies called ECPP, the Elite Player Performance Plan. It got put into place in 2011. Clubs had to spend more money on their academies. They had to increase the levels of coaching. They had to increase the contact time with players. The whole thing was designed around creating more players of better quality for the national team, making it easier for the bigger clubs as well to pick the best players from lower academies and bring them through at their clubs. And it's been transforming academy football. I've seen it. I've worked in academy football and I've seen the changes it's made. And the World Cup, when they put that first in place, they said the first World Cup that they were genuinely targeting was 2022. That's when they said it should really come to fruition. And I think you're seeing that now with players like Bellingham, with players like Foden. They were the generation who were sort of most, they've had the most time in that system because it was brought in 2011. Most players come into academy football around the age of 9 or 10. It was 11 years ago. So it's players of the Bellingham age, the Foden age. There's other players who are a few years older who would have experienced half of their academy career with it as well. So they would have benefited from it too. Right. But I think we're starting to see the benefits of that revamp of the academy system in this country. In the last like 2 or 3 years, I think there's a different type of English player coming through now on a more regular basis that we haven't seen before. Like we haven't had a midfielder like Bellingham for a long time. So we've had some good midfielders in the past, you know, right. People like Lampard, people like Gerrard, people like Scholes, who they had
Gascoigne.
Yeah, they had parts of that to their game, but I think Bellingham is, I think, a real shining example. Like he didn't come through a huge academy either. He was at Birmingham, who've got a really good reputation for producing good young players. But it's frightening what his ceiling could be. I mean, we're only seeing glimpses of it so far, and it's crazy to think how young he still is. But you know, his ceiling is incredibly high.
I hope he shows France his entire ceiling.
It's scary to think what that guy could be like when he's 26, 27.
What's scary? How much he's going to cost after January. That's what's scary.
Yeah, it's going to be three figures, millions.
Oh, like, easy.
Guaranteed. It's going to be over 100 mil. Yeah, but there's a real certain quality of play that's coming through the English academy system now, and it's taken a while to get there. There are certain countries who, like France, have been doing it for years. They had certain things in place in their academies. They also have a league which facilitates more players coming through. There was a time when Germany did it earlier than England. Germany revamped their whole academy system, and that came to fruition for them in 2014 in Brazil. They've since regressed a little bit, and there's people who have criticized their academy system recently and the national pathway they've got. So things go in cycles, and I think England hopefully can capitalize on the fact that we're on the upswing of a cycle. And I hope people who are involved in academy football now, the people that oversee it all, don't rest on their laurels and keep trying to, you know, evolve and improve the system. Because I mean, there's always improvements that can be made. Because I think if you turn around and go, oh, we got it right, we've cracked it, we don't need to change anything, that's when you start moving backwards. And I think that's what's happened to the likes of Germany, who still produce good players, but not quite to the level that they were of real, truly world-class players around that sort of, you know, 2014 era. When
not world-class enough to beat Japan.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, I think England's success at the moment is, I think Southgate deserves a lot of credit, and I think he's a huge, huge part of it. He's a very good tournament manager, and he knows what he's doing with that England team. But also, I think he's benefiting from the fact that we've had obviously, like I say, quality squads before, but there's more quality to pick from than ever right now.
Right.
Yeah.
But do you think these guys are on the level of, the thing is, even going into the tournament, like, because of what England did in the Euros, but like England players, like just the fact that Maguire's in defense and then the other only person you could go to is Eric Dier. Like, the top teams that I'm looking at, they don't have these issues. You know,
that's the weakest part of our squad.
and that's big. That's fucking huge. Mm-hmm. You know, especially against an Mbappe coming up on Friday.
Yeah.
That is fucking, like, a terrifying prospect.
And the worst thing for England is that Maguire has actually played well. So he will keep his spot in front of Mbappe. Mm-hmm. So there's no question marks over whether Maguire should play or not play. So if he goes back to tight, Mbappe is going to be having a good day. So, but even if you look at other things, right? Like, I think I probably would be right in saying that Pickford's probably leading in clean sheets in this tournament.
We let in one goal.
Listen, Alisson might be close to him.
Two goals to Iran.
Alisson had two, can only have two clean sheets at the most, because they conceded against Cameroon and today.
Yeah, he didn't play against, it was, they put Edison in Cameroon.
Right.
So yeah, he's got two, yeah, because he got the two group games, Switzerland and Serbia.
Serbia.
He cheats against.
Right, so, and, I'm just trying to look at that. So,
did you see him keep today, Neil?
Oh, yeah, Allison. He was good.
Yeah, there was none of that thing that you Chelsea guys, like, try to put on him. What is that thing y'all call it? The Allison
effect.
Yeah, that was like, all Allison today.
Well, they don't concede a lot of shots. So even if you look at the number of the quality of shots that they concede, the XGs on those were pretty low. So yeah, maybe it's not exactly the Allison effect. Because even at Liverpool this season, he's actually had to come save their ass a lot. But, I think that stat that I used to refer to was from a couple of seasons ago. And, he's a top keeper. He is probably a touch more complete than Edison, which is, I guess, like, even just, physical, the physicality of Alisson. He's a little taller. His reach is longer than Edison. But that, you know, that's just the kind of depth this England, this Brazil team have. But just to come back on England, so you know, defensively they're doing good. They've also now scored the most number of goals in this World Cup.
Yeah,
and they had the highest points across the group stage and the highest goal difference. And they scored another 3 goals versus Senegal. So,
but I just broke down why that's kind of not a real number, you know.
But isn't that the same for every other team, though? Like you look at the other main guns, right?
When I look at France versus Serbia and France versus Switzerland, like I watched two really good European teams, like push France to the point that it made France actually better.
And was that France? I don't think France.
Or was it Brazil?
Was it Brazil? Yeah, they played Brazil. Yeah, yeah.
Brazil was in Serbia, yeah.
Yeah, so I saw they pushed Brazil to a point that made them better, right? So just jumping around a little bit. And when I saw our game, so I said, these are good practice games for these teams. Like, you know, they give you that toughness and they're going to try to break you down and they're going to try to keep their formation. They're going to play physical, but they have some smart players that could, like, if Brazil mess up, you know, they could get Brazil and get that goal and then lock up shop. But Brazil, you know, with those dangers and those trappings, Brazil managed to win those games. Like, I don't think the games we played.
Like, USA was tough.
All the facts. Yeah. But USA was the best game for us, I think, because it really woke us up, you know? But it also showed, like, where we were lacking. I just don't like the fact that the USA gave us that much trouble, but I also like the fact that it probably woke us up, because it definitely woke us up against Wales and against Senegal. But again, Senegal was missing people, and Wales is Wales. Everybody know when you saw Wales in the last Euros, you see that there's something missing. You don't know what it is, but you could tell that something is missing from that team, and they're not going to go far. So. Like I said, I won't get excited about England. Like, those stats are great. Great. I like them. But, man, if we beat France, then it's coming home. But not before.
See what Argentina or the Netherlands have to say about that.
I think Argentina,
but even
with Messi, is a false... It's a false high seed in this tournament.
But yeah, I mean, they got Otamendi in that team still.
Yeah. I don't think they're as good. Like, I've watched them, and they're not as good, but they're so scrappy. They could win this just the same way they won the Copa America last match. You know, they could win the tournament that way. You know, they're not that good.
They got Messi as well. It's a game changer, isn't it? You can get away with having an average team with him in there, and it makes them a top team.
But you could tell he's not Messi. Like, I don't fear him like that. When I be looking at them, when I'm watching, it's like, yeah, he might wake up for some plays. But is there something definitely not Messi about Messi right now?
Yeah, he's 35 or 34 or whatever.
Yeah, for sure.
Catches up with everyone.
Criticizing him. I'm just saying, you know, that's what I see.
Stand them taking any damn penalties, that's what I say. Let him do his thing in open play. Let someone else take the penalties.
What did you all think of France versus Martin's team, Poland?
Mbappe just world class. Like, those finishes were incredible. Like, one of them, I thought the shot took a deflection, but it turns out he just knuckleballed it in open play.
Yeah,
and the way that ball moved around, like the power and the dip on it, when it, like, it's one of those things where you know what a player's going to do, but for some reason, people can't seem to stop it from happening. Like, you know he's going to play in that inside left channel. He's going to get the ball. He's going to put it onto his right foot, and he's going to hit it. But he's so quick that if you try and show him down the outside, he'll beat you for pace, then he'll cut in on his right foot. So how do you defend against that? Like, the teams that you could try double up on him, which I think would be an effective strategy, because I think he will beat any player we have 1v1. But then if you double up on him, you're leaving someone else open somewhere.
That's what happened to Brazil, like Korea versus Brazil today. Like, they tried to get at one player and then somebody else is popping up and scoring.
Yeah. It's tough.
You know the problem with Brazil, playing Brazil, they got too many Brazilians. So you can't cover all those Brazilians at the same time.
But that's like with France, though, like if you focus too much on Mbappe, Giroud will hurt you. People still sleep on Giroud. He'll hurt you. Like, he'll take his chances. You need one chance, he'll score. He'll hold the ball up. He'll do a job for the team. They got Dembele on the other side. People sleep on Dembele. He's one of the most in-form wingers in the world right now. He's had a great season with Barca so far. He's sorted his attitude out. He's been playing consistent for Barca. Sort of back end of last season and start of this season. He's just as quick as Mbappe. He hasn't quite got the finishing, but he's laying on assists.
He does, but I feel like he doesn't mind. Like, there's a focal point, and he's practiced getting the ball to the focal point at Barca with Lewandowski being there. But he actually scores more at Barca, but it could happen at any moment in this tournament, a barrage of goals by Dembele. Yeah, I actually think there's like room for him to improve. But man, like, that's, imagine having Dembele on one wing and
Mbappe
on the other, and all they're talking about is Mbappe. Like, when you watch the American programming, and I'm like, you don't see this guy. And then finally they stop putting pressure on. And this guy is one of the players of the tournament, Griezmann. They stop out here putting pressure on him and asking where are his goals. And I've accepted that he's playing a new role. But when you see and acknowledge that he's playing a new role, then you're able to say, this guy's one of the players of the tournament with no role.
He's been working his ass off.
Yeah.
Like
this motherfucker has... N'Golo Kanté endurance. Imagine losing N'Golo Kanté and then turning a goal scorer into N'Golo Kanté. Like, I've seen him like in the box, his own box, defending, being a last-ditch defender, and then in the same play upfield, and then doing something in the middle of the field. This guy, and he's a great passer.
This is what happens now that he's back playing for Simeone. Like, you got to... You can't be playing. You can't be playing for Simeone if you're not going to work and defend and run.
Because Atletico Madrid is coming out on him.
Yeah, he could. You know, he got away with being a little bit of more of a luxury player when he was at Barca for a few years, but now he's back with Simeone. It's like, no, boy, you better run. You better tackle.
He was doing some of that at Barca, but they didn't appreciate it. They just wanted the goals. They bought him for goals. Yeah. So they'd always like diss him for that. And I'm like, but look what he's doing. And I think his coach has realized, like, we already have a forward. And then even if he was playing and Benzema was playing, Benzema wasn't going to do all that dirty work. So you have this guy that'll do it, and he knows how to get how a forward's like balls to be passed to them, like retrieving the balls and getting it to them. So he's like their best midfielder to me. What do you guys think of the Brazil game today?
Brazil was
Korea.
I mean, they finally. I think this was like, you know, when we were doing the pre-tournament analysis, and how this crazy Brazil team, like, look at them, the kind of depth they have. They kind of like showcase that in this game, because it was kind of before this, they had a couple of, I think, 2-0 and a 1-0, and then they lost to Cameroon. But this is the game, like, bam, 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 bam. Like, the game was done, like, in 15, 20 minutes.
I barely watched the rest of the game, because I was like, what is there to watch? This is over. I'm sure they're going to do more exciting shit, but the motivation to see this exciting shit is gone, because they were doing it because something was on the line. Now it's like that Richarlison, like, that's the most Brazilian I've ever seen Richarlison. Yeah. Like, like juggling the ball with his head, then on his feet, and then pass, pass, boom, boom, cut in.
And in just... that play, I mean, there was, mm-hmm. and did you notice, like, in that play, for some reason, it, this wasn't really a counter attack or anything, but that was Thiago Silva giving the assist. Like, he was in the box.
Yes.
And I'm like, what's going on? Like, is it so easy that the center defender can actually be in the box giving a tiki-taka pass to Richarlison?
Yeah, if that was a pass by De Bruyne
yeah.
for like a win or just somebody else that's a known midfielder that makes great passes, they would have been like, look at that pass. And then it took a while for me to figure out, like, after a bunch of replays and then somebody finally said it. And I forgot because they barely mention it. So that until you remember it, that I did realize that it was him.
Yeah, I didn't notice it was him too. Then later on, after the game, I saw a stat that Thiago Silva has become the oldest player to give an assist at the World Cup. I think he beat Roger Miller's
record. Yeah.
Yeah, from way back. I think he was 38 something, and this guy's 38 something more. So, and then I'm like, wait, what goal was that? Because that's all the goals. I didn't see Thiago Silva anywhere. But yeah, that was that Richarlison goal. It's just crazy, like, how every player has the technique in that team. Like, Alisson can provide an assist. You give him time on the ball. Like, mm-hmm. you know, Lucas Paqueta, like, Casemiro can score. He can, the fullbacks, obviously. It's just a very complete team. But there are a couple of those teams right now, I think, left in the competition. So
they don't have no Maguire or Dyer in defense. You know, it's solid. And and then when I look at a...
But they also have...
Gumerez is still on the bench.
Yeah.
And when you watch him play, you know he's better than Paqueta. You know he's better than Fred. Like, you see them play, and then they bring him in off the bench, and you're like, this guy's better, you know?
Yeah. So. For me, it's weird, though, when you have... I'm still getting used to having to watch a Brazil team where, like, some of their best midfielders are from West Ham and Newcastle. Like, that just... For me, that blows my mind. Like, that's not how they should look. You should see, you know, team names like Barcelona and Milan and PSG and people like that on that Brazil squad. You're looking, oh, they got Paqueta from West Ham and Guimarães from Newcastle.
That just shows like how much money is there in the Premier League now. Like,
yeah,
middle of the road Premier League teams can just go get a Brazil national player.
Brazil starters, yeah. It's insane. And Paqueta, he's been okay at West Ham this year, but he plays like a slightly different role. He plays slightly deeper for Brazil. Mm. Because he plays like as like an all-out number 10 for West Ham. I think he plays just off the striker for them. Mm-hmm. And then he plays just ahead of... Casemiro is like the holder. He's like the six or the four, whatever you want to call it. And Paqueta is sort of like the eight. And then they've obviously got, you know, Neymar, Vinicius and Richarlison and whoever ahead of them. That was just a fun first half of football to watch, though, today.
I know. They ended that game early for me. So I forgot what I was going to ask or say. What position is Neymar playing in this team?
He's playing the Jose Mourinho Harry Kane position.
Yeah, because he does drop back far sometimes. And then...
Yeah.
And then Richarlison is Giroud in this game.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, because you've got Rafinha on the right and Vinny Jr. on the left, and Neymar seems to have a free role to just float and cause havoc. Sometimes he'll be joining in over the left, sometimes he'll be joining in over the right, sometimes he'll be playing up alongside Richarlison like a forward, sometimes he'll be dropping deeper to get on the ball. He's got that freedom, and he's a player you can do that to. And if you've got someone like Casemiro just sitting at the base of that midfield, holding it all together, he allows some of that freedom ahead of him. And Paqueta's been fairly disciplined as well. Like, he joins in a little bit more. Yeah. So, you know, they've got that still. And then they know they've got that solid back line that they can rely on as well. And they've got Militao playing right back right now. because Marquinhos and Silva are in the centre. So Militao, he's not like a Dani Alves style fullback where he's going to be hitting those overlaps too. He does go forward a little bit, but he's not quite the same. So they've got that solid base that can allow those players to go and be creative and have the freedom to roam around. And that's why I said at the start of the tournament that this Brazil team have got such a good mix of experience and youth. They've got a good mix of creativity and flair and just solidity as well. And that's something you don't always get with Brazil teams in the past. There was a time when they almost went too solid under Scolari. I mean, they still had some players in there. They still won some stuff under him. But he almost made them a little bit too functional. And then you had other teams where they were too flair. They had no backbone. But they seem to have a really good mix at this tournament. And I think I would make them and France joint favourites right now. They're the two teams 100%. I think are at the top of the pile. And then there's that group underneath that involves, you know, Argentina, Netherlands, us, Portugal perhaps as well, Spain, if they get their shit together and step up a little bit. But I think Brazil and France will be the two best teams at the tournament.
Yeah, 100%. I just want to say it was great while it lasted, Japan. one more thing. Did you have Brazil? Do you, any of you have a problem with Brazil dancing on South Korea's grave every time they scored? or were you all cool with the dancing? My Roy King, of course, was not.
It's in the culture.
Right.
They're not disrespecting anyone. They're expressing joy. That's how they do it. It's in their culture. They turn up to the stadium. They travel with their tambourines and stuff.
Why are white people having
such fun? I don't understand. Like, why is Roy Keane behaving as if he hasn't seen people dance after scoring a goal?
Yeah.
Like, Peter Crouch did the robot, for God's sake. Like, you know, this is, at least you get to see a good dance.
And we put up with it.
Oh. Yeah. It's nothing new.
And it's the way they come in on the bus. Like, they show them on the bus, on the way. Like, I feel like in Europe, you're afraid to express anything because of the press or just the way you're brought up. And then there's this, like, when you come from a third world country where you have to manufacture your own joy from poverty. And, like, one of the best ways to do it is, like, play music and just create fun out of nothing. And that's the way they come in. Like, I would love to be on that motherfucking bus just to ride on the bus with the team. Is this a band or are they world-class soccer players? And then they're getting off the bus and they're on the bus and then they get off the bus and they're in the locker room and they're just so loose. And like, a lot of teams are bonded, but it's great to loosen up yourself to the point where you don't even see this as like, you know, and then Pele is dying. A shout out to Pele. Like, now he's going to win his fourth World Cup from a hospital bed because they're playing for him. You know what I'm saying? So then, as if they didn't need even more of a reason to bond than to like want to do this. So it's going to be hard to beat them, man. Now they got Pele joined the team. It's going to be tough. I don't mind the dancing. And peace to Japan. You did your thing. I don't know how a 97-year-old Luka Modric is running around out there like he's 25. Like, what the fuck is
Benjamin
going on?
Benjamin Button.
For real, man. Like, they subbed him out today, and I was like, he doesn't even look tired. But that was a ballsy-ass move. And what about that goalkeeper, Lee?
Livakovic.
How did he do it? How did he do it?
He's a good goalkeeper. You know, Neil knows he's a good goalkeeper. He's come up against him.
Oh, for real, Neil? What happened? What did Chelsea lose?
The Croatian goalkeeper?
The Plezier?
Yeah.
Does he play for...
Oh, when did he come up against him? I don't know.
Is he at Zagreb? I thought he plays for Zagreb.
Zagreb? Yeah.
Oh, in the Champions League
early. I don't think we even threatened the keeper much in the Zagreb game. So
you only saw the Zagreb attackers.
Yeah.
But
it's hilarious.
But no, he's I mean, yeah, he played a good game. I feel for Japan, though. Like, I was rooting for them. I wanted to see an Asian team progress, and they're the favourite one that I have. It was sad to see Yoshida, ex-Southampton player, miss a penalty. We didn't teach him that. He's learned that somewhere else. he learned that at Sampdoria, I think. But no, they're just such a likable team and likable fans. Like, you know, their fans stay behind and clear up the stadiums.
Who's going to clean up the stadiums now? You sent all the Asian teams home.
It's going to be some migrant workers earning 10 pence an hour. Instead, if there's any of them alive still. I got dark. yeah, but Japan, yeah, such a likable team. Like, they play such good football as well. There was one chance I think they had where there was a lovely little move and it just got like slotted into the box and a guy cut inside on his right foot and then glazed it over the bar. But yeah, they got good players all throughout their team. They're, you know, fairly solid defensively. They play nice, attractive attacking football, technical players.
Yeah, man.
I was rooting for them, but this Croatia team, they're, you know, they're wily, they're street smart. They know how to, yeah. They start slow, this Croatia team as well. They started slow in other games as well. I remember watching them against Canada. I think I spoke about this before, where they went 1-0 down to Canada, but it only took them another few minutes to figure Canada out and then put their foot on their necks. And in this game, yeah, they didn't play great, especially the first half. And Japan could have scored a bunch of goals, I thought. But then, you know, second half, they figured out what they were doing. They worked their way back into it. They started making more chances. Yeah, Perisic stepped up. All their old guys stepping up. I thought he was class, not just on the goal, but he you know, once Croatia settled down, he was probably the most effective player they had. Kramaric as well leads the line quite well for them. They got a solid team. It'd be interesting to see how they get
Lovren
on.
Lovren played great.
He's probably, you know, he's probably playing great because he's playing in Russia right now, so he's probably juicing. I hope they're piss testing him. get him in that piss test room. I bet he's getting selected after every game for Croatia. He's like, what, me again?
How random is this?
He's had a whole season of it at Zenit. But yeah, I mean, I think because it's Brazil Croatia next, isn't it now?
Yeah, I think so.
I think that's going to be a fascinating game to watch because I don't think Croatia can afford to start slow against Brazil. If they start slow against Brazil, they're done. But it'll be interesting watching Croatia. That's what I mean. It's going to be fun to watch them use all their experience to try and shut this Brazil team down.
They're like the Undertaker team. They're like, dong, like, they just sit back up. Like, they turn around, like, get back up. We got to do this again.
I think they kept the record of not winning a single knockout game in a tournament in normal time since 1998, like the Devasukar World Cup. They just haven't won, like, in all these years. They haven't won a single game in normal time. They just hang around, you know, and then they figure out a way.
I've got good memories of Brazil-Croatia, though. I was in Berlin in 2006, the night when Brazil played Croatia in that tournament. It was fairly early on in the tournament. I couldn't get a ticket. I was in Berlin. The game was in Berlin, but I went to the fan park, which was like 150,000 people.
Damn.
And there were loads of Brazilians, loads of Croatians watching it on a big screen in front of the Brandenburg Gate in the middle of Berlin. And Kaká scored a world-class goal that day.
He opened up
his body and just bent it. Top corner. I think they've played since then. I think they played each other at the 2018.
That was Kaká's the only goal, right? Like, nobody else scored in that game.
It was 1-0, I believe. Yeah, 1-0 back in 2006. But yeah, I think they played each other in 2018. Not at the World Cup. I think it was like there was a game somewhere. Let me have a look. I've got the details here. Let me have a look. Brazil, Croatia. They played each other.
Did Modric play in that 2006 game? I wouldn't be surprised if he did.
Let me have a look. They played each other in a friendly at Anfield in 2018. Here we go. Lineups. Brazil, Croatia in 2006.
No, it's no Modric.
No, he wasn't.
Modric's on the sub. He was on the bench.
He was on the bench. Yeah,
I think
yeah.
I think he played in 5 World Cups or 6 or some shit like that.
That's just crazy.
I think they took Modric out the game today so we wouldn't find out that he's a vampire. Like, they had to, like, prove, keep him human looking somehow. So let's do some human shit to him. Let's take him out the game.
That's insane. Yeah, he was there. 13th of June, 2006, he was playing. He didn't come off the bench, so he didn't play in that game, but he was sat there. But yeah, I went out to that World Cup and I watched a couple of other games. I watched Spain versus Ukraine in that tournament when Spain pumped Ukraine 4-0. That was Ukraine with Shevchenko as well. But Spain had way too much for him. And then I saw Sweden versus Paraguay in Berlin. Spain versus Ukraine was down in Leipzig. Got the train down there for that. And then I watched Sweden versus Paraguay at the Olympic Stadium in Berlin. The Sweden team had like Lundberg and Ibrahimovic. Lundberg scored, I think. They won 1-0. In that game. So that was a fun little trip. Basically, me and a friend, we traveled over there and we're like, let's watch everyone but England.
Oh, sure.
We just tried to avoid England and England fans.
That's pretty dope. This is some good ass fucking traveling stories. Especially watching a game at a fan park under like a bridge. I forgot the name of the bridge you mentioned, but that's pretty fucking dope.
Brandenburg Gate. It's the big it's like a big building. It's like a big monument, and they put the big screen on the front of it.
Nice.
Right in the center of like the historic part of Berlin, which is it was pretty cool.
And they don't do any fan zones like for the World Cup or nothing like that. Like, yeah, you can go to they bars and shit, but there's no. I'd love for it.
Yeah.
Like, even when it's in the summer, like, I don't remember any fan zones or nothing like that.
They used to do them in the UK, but then if you let too many people congregate in the UK in one place for football, you get some public disorder.
COVID.
No, just people being misbehaving, drunk.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's pretty messed up. But yeah, that was, let me find, I've got like a picture of it online. I just managed to look one up. That was like the big screen on the gate.
Yeah, that's dope. That's like being at a goddamn Coachella or something.
Pretty much. But yeah, it was insane. There were so many people there. It was, it was pretty crazy. It was a great experience.
What do you guys think about Morocco versus Spain tomorrow? 7 a.m.
I mean, Spain got to be the favourites for that one. Morocco got players who could hurt them. They got players who can show up. They've shown that in this tournament. But I think Spain should have a little bit too much for them. But it's not beyond possibility that Morocco could do something.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, after seeing what's happened in the last couple of days, like all the fairy tales of the group stages pretty much have gone out of the window. So, I mean, Spain does have a goal-scoring problem too. Like, I know they scored a lot of goals, but I still don't trust their players to be good finishers.
I'm with you on that.
So maybe that's probably Morocco's chance, because Morocco, you know, they play with a lot of composure too. So they're not in there to play chaotic football. So, yeah, and they can get at Spain, but Spain should have enough quality to figure out a way over 90 minutes to get through. But yeah, probably like Japan kept it tight today, you know, and I thought even Poland kept it pretty tight against France.
They did.
Senegal again. In the first 20, 30 minutes, they kept it tight. Like they could have actually gone ahead.
They could have.
The USA could have gone ahead against Netherlands. They started the game really well. So I think what we are seeing is that
I can't believe Pulisic, the guy in all the commercials, the person they've been pumping up to be as big as Lionel Messi, didn't put that ball away for America. But go ahead. Sorry.
You know, the reason for that, right? Like, he just had too much pressure on him, as the ad says.
Bro, I thought pressure makes Volkswagens.
Yeah, it doesn't make Pulisic. So I guess what you're seeing is like these top teams, they're really like the difference in quality, like that last 10%, 15% extra quality that they have in, you know, that effectiveness in either box, is that's really, you know, making the difference. So, yeah, maybe Spain, Portugal, that's going to be the same case.
Yeah. I feel like Morocco can definitely cause Spain problems, and maybe tomorrow is when Spain's scoring problems show up, because they didn't score. They only scored, what was the Germany game? 1-1. And then they only scored one against Japan. So Morocco has been fighting tooth and nail. That's another team that's kind of street smart above their pay grade. And tomorrow, they're my Japan tomorrow. I'm rooting for them like they're Japan tomorrow. Like, so, and I like Spain. It's not like I got beef with Spain. I like seeing Gavi and Pedri, but Gavi and Pedri will continue after this. I just want to see Morocco do something. And it's just so funny. As soon as they started bragging separately about this is the most amount of Asian teams, even though one of those Asian teams was Australian, that there's this many Asian teams have never made it like to the knockout round. Like everybody, they just got rid of all the Asian teams in one weekend. All right, Asia, go home. No more Asians here. Yeah. Portugal, Switzerland, $200 million or pounds or euros a year, Ronaldo versus Switzerland, versus the gross national product of Switzerland.
Are you saying you don't back the great Denis Zakaria on loan at Chelsea?
Or is it what's the Ghana guy that Switzerland has? Is he from
Cameroon? Mbolo.
Cameroon. Mbolo, okay.
Yeah, yeah. Brilliant Mbolo. I think Zakaria Zakaria, is he Ghanaian, Neil? I know he's got like a dual passport.
Yeah, I'm not sure. He's not. We haven't bought him, so I'm not invested enough to know all of those details.
Let me have a look. I want to find out now. He was. He was born in Geneva, but he has a South Sudanese father and a Congolese mother.
Congolese mother. Yeah.
Yeah.
Morocco. That's Ziyech tomorrow, right?
Ziyech, Ashraf Hakimi.
And Hakimi.
Hakimi. Yeah.
And Ziyech is like, you know, he's really stood up this tournament. Like almost every game, he's there. He's been performing at a high enough level.
I think Ziyech is a player who he needs to be loved and he needs to play every game. Like at Chelsea, I think you don't see the best of him all the time because he's sort of in and out the team. I don't think he's a player who can be like a small cog in a big machine that might not always play. Like at Ajax, he was like one of the main guys. At Morocco, he's one of the main guys. He's shown his ability at Chelsea, I feel, but just not like consistently.
But even at Chelsea, like every time the percentage of times he's been good for us when we've played him on the wing is very acceptable. It's just that we stop playing with wingers for them. And I never understand why, like even under Tuchel and so far under Potter, we have decent wingers like, you know, Pulisic, Ziyech, Raheem Sterling. We had Hudson-Odoi, he's on loan now. But we never really use them as wingers because player like Ziyech, he likes having that space. You'd start using these wingers as inside forwards. They crowd in all that space. Ziyech likes having that space. He likes having to, you know, the ability to like look at the entire pitch and like play with, bring people out. And he's getting that kind of space on the wing for Morocco. So, I'm not entirely surprised that he's doing what he's doing.
Yeah. What he does where he, because he obviously likes to play inverted and he cuts inside on his on his left foot, and then Hakimi goes around the outside. Like you have that going on with him and Reece James quite easily.
Yeah. But that, again, that should be something that's organic and like, you know, the defeat of each other. If you're like putting him in a bottle and asking him just to be an inside forward, I don't think that works either. Fair play to him. I hope at least this game comes out to be a little tight.
Come on, Japan, Morocco. That's all I got to say. So what are your thoughts on who do you think is going to win tomorrow, Portugal or Switzerland?
Has to be Portugal. Portugal actually is my dark horse to go all the way, like apart from France and Brazil.
Yeah, because Bruno has been balling out of control.
Mm-hmm.
So, because I'm mad at Ronaldo right now, I wouldn't mind him to be surprised knocked out of the contest.
Why are you still mad at Ronaldo? Like he's not even at your club anymore. He's joining Al-Nassr.
But here's the thing, like so you have this, and I also think a part of why he's going to Saudi is this World Cup. He's in the Middle East already. And he's like, oh, it's not that bad out here. And then that team that he's going to join, I think that was the team that beat, mostly the players from that team beat Argentina. So there's a quality of football is not that bad out here. So I think it's the irony that the World Cup is in the Middle East and he's in the Middle East and that a Middle Eastern team, which he wouldn't consider before or he turned down an offer before, is trying to buy him. It's like, it's the perfect place to sell them on. Come in there and they can meet some of the people and the characters involved and they'll show them a lot of love and he'll be like, oh, you know what, I'll stay with this love and sort of country that
won't care about his past allegations as well, that sort of stuff's not really a problem there, so
yeah. He only did that to a woman. So
he's also
also
a massive fan of Piers Morgan and Jordan Peterson. So, you know, it's...
I mean, that's
there's a little, like, sinking of ideals happening here.
Yeah, that's a crime. Oh. But also, here's another new reason to be mad at him, because he could have made this move in the beginning of the season and we would have made some money off it.
Yeah, in the summer.
Yeah, we'd have made some money off it, and now we get nothing for it.
You get him off your wage. You get him off your wage bill, which is a win in itself. That's going to save you some money.
Yeah, 16 mil. But I'll take him off the wage bill and some money for him. That would have been, because Man U doesn't make a lot of money off players, so that would have been cool.
But yeah. I don't mind if Portugal go through, but I will hope that Granit Xhaka just kicks him up in the air for 90 minutes. I would love to see that. I'd love to see Granit Xhaka just fold him up.
Well, he might not start though. Like, did you see the latest reports of the Portugal coach apparently not being happy with Ronaldo because of his reaction when he got subbed off?
Oh, that's a surprise.
Yeah. So, and this is, by the way, the guy who's managed Ronaldo for a long time, so they haven't had any historical beef.
Yeah, Santos was a manager at the Euros, wasn't he, in 2016?
Yeah.
I could tell Santos has been like almost held hostage by the legacy of Ronaldo, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then this is a great excuse for him now, because why is Leao on the bench? Like, you could tell Ronaldo is not the old Ronaldo, but you're starting him because you kind of have to. But now he's consistently proven he's not Ronaldo. That, and then there was a poll, and 70% of Portuguese fans, like, everybody's recognizing he's out of form. If they play Switzerland tomorrow and they start him and they lose, like, that coach loses his job for not making a great call. And he's got players that he can use in that position. So we'll see what... Tomorrow's going to be interesting.
And
very interesting.
And the coach probably looked at Ten Hag dropping Ronaldo and was like, wait, you can do that? I never knew that was an option. Like, that's crazy. That's a move you're allowed to make?
Oh, shit. They told me they'd kill my family. His family's still alive. Fuck it. All right.
If anything, though, it might benefit him to start someone else, have someone do a better job for the team, and then for the last 20 minutes or so, throw on angry Ronaldo with a point to prove.
Yeah.
Angry Ronaldo is only moving one way from the dugout. That's to us. He's not moving to us.
He goes out to the parking lot this time and doesn't realize he's in Qatar and his car's not out there and he can't drive home. So he has to go back in and wait in the dressing room with a bus with everybody else. But yeah.
It's weird though. Like in the Portugal game, that could be the last time we see Ronaldo at a World Cup. If it doesn't go their way, that could be it. That could be him done. Mm. Same with Argentina and Netherlands. It might be the end of Messi.
Yeah, I mean, it's time for it to be over, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a big era to end though.
Yeah, but it lasted so long. It's not that I'm not even tired of it. I just don't want to see them limp out of it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't like to see Ronaldo limping around, throwing tantrums. Yeah. Like I want it to go out like he played. So if something cuts it short, like actually him going to Saudi Arabia and accepting that is like the best thing for him. You know?
Mm.
Yeah, it's just, yeah, I don't want it. It's like when Mike Tyson lost to Lennox Lewis, I only saw that fight once and that's when it was live and I didn't know he was going to lose, but I can't watch that fight again.
Mm.
You know, I don't want to see like those who are good at, like excelled at what they good at, like not be the moment when, you know, they're not. Well, this is going to be a short one today. So anybody got anything else they want to bring up?
Talking of boxing, I went to Spurs Stadium for the first time on Saturday night.
Oh, yeah, you did say you were there. Why were you there?
I went to watch Tyson Fury fight.
Who did he fight?
He fighted Derek Chisora.
Nobody knew about that shit out here.
For the third time. It was sold out the stadium. It was like 60-something thousand.
Normally we would know. He's fighting.
There wasn't an American fighter involved, so no one cared.
Shit. And but even the last time he fought that black guy, that's English, we knew.
It was Dillian White. That would have been against, I think.
And that was this year.
Yeah, I mean, everyone knew that he was gonna win this fight. It wasn't like the you couldn't get very good odds on a win for Fury. Like it was, he was kind of almost doing Chisora a favor because I think it probably is going to be Chisora's last fight, and he was saying, "Yeah, I'll give you one last, because they're friends as well. I'll give you one last payday." And he beat him up for 10 rounds, and then the referee stopped it because he was like, "He can't keep doing this." The good thing was because they were trying to get a fight with Anthony Joshua, and they couldn't make it happen, so this one just got put in as like a placeholder almost. And I mean, knew what the result was going to be. I'd never been to see live boxing before, so I was like, I want to go see the stadium. I want to go see a live heavyweight world title fight. There was another world title fight on the undercard as well, so I got to see some good boxing. It was a fun day out, but I hate Tottenham Stadium.
You want to go see the one time somebody lifts
somebody wins something.
Win something
in that stadium.
Exactly.
Hilarious.
All I would say is the queues for the bar were too long. The stadium's horrible for transport at night. It's a completely soulless corporate.
And that's the good stadium.
So you know, any opportunity I get to shit on Spurs, I'll take it. But I was sitting at ring level, so I was like on the pitch. So that was quite weird, like looking around and there's just this full stadium around you. You sort of got a little feeling of what it's like to be on that pitch. But yeah, I mean, I didn't lift any trophies, so I felt like a Spurs player.
did you get one of those beers when they put the beer glass down on the thing and then it fills up from the bottom? Did you get one of those?
No, I didn't get to have one of those. I don't think they were giving those out where I was, because I was in I had to walk in via the away end. And I don't think they furnished the home fans with those. I don't think they let the away fans have them. Which kind of annoyed me.
The home fans need to be given something, like, you know. They need to be humored.
The away fans leave with the points.
Yeah.
That's all they give. That's all they give. They say, you leaving with the points, you're not getting the bottom of the top beer.
Well, you know, those fancy beers are the only cups their fans are seeing. So, but I was annoyed they made me walk in via the away entrance because I bought like expensive tickets for this. I was sitting ring level, so I was kind of annoyed at that. But no, it was a fun experience. So it was a different experience. Nice to see another sport, you know, at a high level like that. So. And Usyk, the Ukrainian fighter, was there watching. He was sat right by the side of the ring. And then they got up and had like a little wrestling promo moment because they're going to fight next year, hopefully. And that'll be a really good fight. You know, it's they're talking about it being in Saudi Arabia. I don't want it to be there. I want it to be in the UK or in the US, somewhere where fights, where the big fights are. So we'll see. But yeah, that was something different.
Yeah, that's good. That guy, Usyk, those are two really good technical fighters with two different type of styles. So it'd be interesting to see which one of them style is better than the other. Like Usyk, like he can power punch you apart, and Tyson is just the combos and the way he moves is just he's just born with that shit.
Big size difference between the two of them, though. That'll be interesting to see. Hopefully that one happens because that's heavyweight division's boring when people just keep ducking and diving each other and not actually making them fights happen. They end up just fighting bums. I mean, I paid to go watch someone fight a bum, but I wanted to see it, and it meant the ticket prices were within my price range. When Fury fights Usyk, I don't think they'll be in my price range. So
yeah, at least you got to see him. Lee, you got anything before we bounce? I mean, Neil.
No, just
no. I'm really looking forward to these matchups. Let's get all the riffraff out of the way, and then
you mean Asian people?
I think Asia's already out. Asia's already gone yet. Asia and fake Asia. I think Morocco. Let's get Ziyech back to Abu Dhabi for, you know, Chelsea. Chelsea's playing Aston Villa on the 11th of December in Abu Dhabi.
No, Man United's in Spain.
Yeah. So, you know, let's get the happy family back. Reece James back in training. So, yeah, I'm pretty... Things are looking up, you know.
Koulibaly's on his way home now.
Koulibaly's on his way home. Sterling, I mean, you know, his crib got burgled.
I see you found a way to get him home.
What's going on? What's this, you know, epidemic of England footballers getting dropped in the at a major tournament?
It's just crazy. What's going on? It's hilarious. But yeah, well, we'll be back on Thursday. Just I guess to preview the. Upcoming weekend matches, you know, because that's when. But you know, we'll talk about those then. No sense doing it now. But yeah,
we'll have the full quarterfinal lineup by Thursday, won't we?
Yeah, because by tomorrow it'll be complete, and then this I get to sleep one day, 2 days. Because tomorrow's Tuesday, I get to sleep Wednesday, I get to sleep Thursday.
Yeah, and then it's Argentina and Netherlands on Friday.
Yeah, and that might be at a decent time. It's just one game, right?
Yeah,
or two games at that.
I think it might just be one a day from the quarterfinals. I know England are at 7 p.m. Oh no, I think there's two games on Saturday.
Two games Friday, two games Saturday.
Oh shit!
Oh, yeah, so England at 7. We're done pretty much.
Yeah, we're just winding down. Yeah, it's winding down.
Is it England at 7 p.m. here on Saturday? So that'll be what, 11 a.m. for you guys?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We got 11 match. Which is fine. That's reasonable. That's decent. Like, I look tired now because I didn't sleep all weekend. These goddamn games. I haven't slept all month.
You're on that World Cup sleep schedule.
Yeah, man. Which is no sleep at all. Well, all right, guys. Appreciate y'all. Thank you for listening. Thank y'all for watching. We're going to pay attention to your comments, any thoughts on any of the teams and players, anything you liked about the tournament. Yeah, basically that. And we're heading towards Christmas. And everybody enjoy the season. Love y'all. Take care of yourselves. One. Turn that on.